Okay, the third Aliyah of Parshas Bo is brief, but many very fascinating points. This is the aftermath of Makas Choshech, and Paro seems to be well chastened here. Vayikra Faro el Moshe, Vayomer Luchu Ivdu Es Hashem, Rak Tonechem Uvukarchem Yitzog, Gam Tapachem Yilech Imochem. So Paro calls Moshe. And how exactly does he call him is not so clear. He wasn't able to text. He wasn't able to send him an instant message. And being that he's kind of immobilized by the darkness, it's a good question. How exactly is this communication happening? So here there are various interpretations of what exactly is going on. When did this happen? How did this happen? Was this at a lighter stage of the darkness? So when we talk about 3 days, so was the whole thing 3 days? Was this at the end of the 3 days? Was this 6 days total? Was this the first 3 days? The last 3 days? So different Mefarshim have different understandings. The Malbim understands that Moshe showed up on his own, and that's why it says Paro just communicated with him. But Yikra Faro El Moshe, instead of saying Lim Moshe, he didn't summon him. The Targum Yonasan has extra words here. Ulasof Tvasin Yomin at the end of the 3 days, and Yaakov Kamenetsky has a discussion here, raising the question of whether he means to say that the whole thing was at 3 days, or this was the end of a 3 day period. It's not 100% sure, but he notes that in Ibn Ezra, sounds like the whole thing was 3 days long, and this was at the end after it was over. Vayikra Achar Gimel Yomin. Sharol or that he was able to see man after it was over, and he then summoned Moshe. So the Zion the Torah discusses, so why is that indeed what happened at this point? So how come now we have Paro actually calling for Moshe of his own initiative? So he has a number of possibilities. One possibility is that he was so knocked out by this particular Makkah at this time, and it was really so debilitating for him, that he didn't have anything left in the tank, and he said, okay, this time I'm going to initiate peace talks, so to speak. Or, similarly, maybe he was really afraid of what the next one would be, and he wasn't going to wait for Moshe to come and say, okay, here's what's happening, and then he would negotiate, and then he would say, okay, let's see what we can tolerate. He wasn't going to let that happen. Or, he said, maybe he actually believed that the Jews would leave and come back, because he thought if they would just wanted to escape, they could have escaped during the darkness. So maybe now he really thought that it could be that they'll just go and bring their korbanos and come back. So he was ready to talk about that. So he said, okay, so you go and take your animals, well, your animals stay rather, and you can take your children with you this time. And with Yomer Moshe, Gamata, Titan Biodenu, Zvachim Va'olos, Kasinu, Vashem Elokeinu. So you have to give us animals for sacrifice. Vagamikneinu, Yelet, Imanu, Mosi Shoyer, Parsa, Kumenu, Nikach, Va'avodas Hashem Elokeinu, Va'nafnu, Lo Nezo, Ma'na'avodas Hashem, Abu Eyu Shama. So we're going to bring all of our animals, and you're also going to give us animals. And we don't know what exactly is going to be involved in our avoda until we get there. So Rashi understands this whole formulation that we're taking ours and we're taking yours. Lo dayecha shemekneinu yelechimonu ela gam mishocha titein. So you're going to give us and we'll take our own. There's a whole discussion from the Sforim about the status of a carbon from an Akum, carbon from an Oved Avodah Zarah, and how exactly that fits in and what different types are brought. So is that what's going on here? Rabbanel has a different kind of understanding here, that Moshe meant it basically bitnia, that what, you think I'm going to bring animals for you? So that's not going to work. It's going to be a zavr choshoyim. It's going to be an offering from evildoers. Even though theoretically the Gemara tells us could bring karbanos from Bnei Noach, but from you guys certainly not going to be the message that we want to convey here. So it must mean that we're going to have to be able to bring our own animals. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do that. We're going to bring our own animals. In the Sefer Bar Yosef, he has a whole mahalach here where he explains that what's going on is that this refers back to the previous exchange by the Makkah of Arba, that there, so Paro told them that there's no need for them to bring the children, because there, when the understanding was that they were going to bring Karbanos, so Paro's argument was, so what involvement do the children have in the Karbanos? And then when there was an objection to that, and there was a whole back and forth, so Paro assumed that what was happening was that they were actually going to sacrifice their children. So now he's saying that, okay, so fine, so go sacrifice your children, but then don't bring the animals with. And that was what was reflected in his statement. And there in the Bar Yosef, he has a whole Hezber based on the Midrashim, how Paro could have come to that conclusion. In any event, so Moshe says, no, we're bringing our animals, and we're bringing the children, bring everybody, and that's what we're going to do. So once again, the Chazik Hashem is like Paro, who over the Shulchan. And so we discussed this last week, the whole idea that Paro's heart gets hardened, and despite what seems like was going to happen, he is not willing to let them go. V'yomelo Paro, leich me'olai. So Paro says, get away from me. Yishamelocha al tosef v'ros panai, ki v'yomer oscha panai tamuz. So Paro says, get away from me. Don't come to me anymore. The next time you see me, you're going to die. V'yomer Moshe, Cain, divarta, yeah, you're correct to a certain extent. La'osif od, ra'os panecha, I don't plan on seeing you anymore. So here, this Naim Torah has an interesting comment. It says, so how did Moshe know this? How did Moshe know the promise that he's not going to see him anymore? So he notes that the Gemara in Masechet Erechin has a discussion regarding the mitzvah of tochacha. How far are you obligated to go regarding the mitzvah of tochacha? So the Gemara has three opinions. One opinion is ad nazifa, until they send you away, until they excommunicate you. Another opinion is until chlala, until they curse you. And another opinion is until hakah, until they hit you. So he suggests that the purpose of Moshe coming with these warnings is really all to get Paro to change his behavior. It's all within the category of tochacha. So he was suggesting that by now he's been yotzei choladei, because Paro has sent him away. So that was a fulfillment of nazifa, and the expression that you said to him in the past, that was a fulfillment of chlala. And now he's saying that you're going to die. That's basically an expression of hakas. Okay, so now Kuli Alma, he's accomplished everything, all the different standards of tochacha, so therefore there's no reason for him to come and warn him any further. There's no reason for him to encounter him any further. Everything that needs to be done has been done. Very creative approach. Okay, v'yomer Hashem el Moshe, o nega echad avi al paro v'al Mitzrayim. I have one more terrible plague to bring upon Paro and Mitzrayim. Ach rechein yishalach etchem mizah. After that, he's going to send you kishocho kala gareshi garesh eschem mizah. He's going to send you completely kala. Rashi here explains gemira kalil kuchem yishalach. He's going to send everybody totally away, and that's it. It's going to be done. So preceding that, so here there is this very interesting direction. There's daberna ba'azne ha'am yishalu ish me'etriyehu. So you should say, please, right? Rashi says, "Ei na elalashin bakasha." So you have to kind of ask them, please tell the nation that they should ask all of their neighbors. Interesting, the language re'ehu here, the Mefarshim pick up on that, because the idea that the Mitzrim should be referred to as re'ehu is itself interesting. But the Jews should ask the Mitzrim for their valuables, for their gold utensils and their silver utensils, and this is going to end up being what they are going to leave with. So Rashi has a comment here which gets a lot of attention. And before we see the Rashi, so this whole idea that they're going to come away with all of this property, so it would sound like that makes sense, min hadin. Medrash in Parshas Re'eh seems to understand this in the context of Hanukkah. It was talked about over there in Sefer Dvarim, that when it comes to an Eved, when you free an Eved, you're supposed to give him a gift, you're supposed to give him some property. That Hanukkah sometimes compares to the contemporary model of severance pay, the whole discussion, to what extent there is a relationship between some kind of a model for severance pay in the notion of Hanukkah. So one possibility is that this money, this property that was to come to the Jewish people, maybe that's the model for that, that it has a Hanukkah component to it. While the other possibility, it sounds like from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that it was their wages, that it was their schar pu'uah. But here, Rashi has, based on the Gemara, a interesting spin on it, shlo yomer oso tzadik. So we shouldn't have a situation where that tzadik, meaning Avram, that what should Avram not say? What are we afraid he's going to say? V'avodum z'inu osam kayem behem? That the part of the prophecy that he was told, that the Jews would be enslaved in Egypt, that was fulfilled. And that after that, after the enslavement, they would leave with great wealth. That was not fulfilled regarding them. So apparently, because we don't want Oso Tzadik, we don't want Avram to have that taina, so then we want to make sure that the prophecy was fulfilled. So there's a lot, as you could imagine, that is discussed about this. And all the Mefarshim asked the same question. Among them, I guess appropriately, the Sefer Kliyaka, the appropriate title, that this is the only concern. This is the reason that there was a Kpeda to make sure to do this, because we're afraid of Avram and Shamayim having a Taina. If God made a promise, so presumably he's going to want to fulfill that promise anyway. It's only because of the concern, Shalayomar Osu Zadik, because we don't want Avram to have a Taina. That itself seems like a strange thing to point to. So there are many different approaches to this question. The Yaakov Kamenetsky comments here that as far as the Hatzach is concerned, you could argue that it wasn't really coming to them, because that was assuming that they were enslaved the entire time of the Nevuah. But the time was cut short. If the time was cut short, then maybe that part of the equation also wasn't necessarily in play. And maybe they weren't going to be obligated to, or the Mitzrayim weren't really going to owe them this kind of remuneration. So it wasn't necessarily a part of the actual Havtacha. The Lev Avram, Avram Weinfeld, has a whole discussion here that the emphasis about what Avram would say or wouldn't say has to do with the fact that Avram himself, we know, is somebody who never questioned the Kadosh Baruch Hu's actions. That was his whole Emunah, and of course, we have much greater instances of where he could have had, so to speak, a taina on a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and promises that didn't seem like they were being fulfilled, what the whole Akedah was about. But presumably, what you have here, it's akin to Moshe Rabbeinu, is that when he's speaking on behalf of the Am, so then he takes on a whole different persona. So it's one thing, what happens to me, okay, but here for the Jewish people, that they shouldn't get what was promised to them, that he's going to be a very fierce advocate, just like you see by Moshe Rabbeinu himself, the way he spoke about the Jewish people. So perhaps for that reason, that's why there's this emphasis specifically on what Avram would say as the guardian of the deal that Avram represented for the Jewish people. In the Aznayim Torah, he has a discussion about this, and the whole notion, especially, that the Jews had to be asked, you know, to say, hey, could you please think about this idea that you will ask for, the whole notion that they have to be convinced to ask for this. You know, you would think they would be interested anyway. So it wouldn't be something you'd have to beg the Jews to ask for. So he has a whole discussion there. He says, we didn't understand this until recently. He wrote, as I am the Torah, that after the Holocaust, when the questions came up about reparations, what the Jews went through. So there we saw that there were two camps, that there were those who said, for sure, we should take reparations for the Germans. what they should be, the murderers and also the inheritors. They should hold on to everything that they stole from the Jewish people. That was one perspective. But then there were those who said, no, we're not going to be involved in negotiating with them at all. We're not going to let them think that they paid for what they did and that it's all done and that it's all over. We're not going to take a cent from them. So there was an attitude then that we're not interested in taking anything from them. And presumably at the end of the Shiva in Mitzrayim also, there were people who said that we suffered terribly at the hands of the Mitzrayim, and we're not going to let them think that they were able to buy us off, that they're able to just pay for it, and that that settles everything. So there was presumably a segment of the population that was going to refuse to take it. And therefore, for that reason, the focus was not on what they want, and in addition, we had to have a request for them to take it, and it wasn't on any kind of yashrus in them getting the payment, because they were happy to be melchol, or they were insistent on being melchol, but specifically because this was the arrangement with Avraham Avinu, that it had to be carried through. The Marsha had a different reason that the Jews would have been melchol, because they would have been concerned it would have delayed the exodus. They wanted to get out, and if they were going to have to ask for all this property in between, so then that could hold up things. So maybe they would have been more interested in just leaving rather than asking for it. So that itself maybe was a reason why they had to be convinced. It's also suggested in some of the Svarim, I think it was Ma'amar Torah, also has an additional interpretation there, that a focus on Avram's appreciation of what was going on, and specifically that they had to be convinced to do it, is because it highlights the fact that the Jews themselves were not seeking this out because they were not materialists, and that they went through this whole history in the Mitzrayim, and they came out pure. They came out not looking for profits or for riches, and that the only reason that they are coming out with the wealth is because that was a part of the process, and that was the haftacha, and that Avram should see that, yes, his descendants still maintain their proper attitude, and that they are taking this bounty because that was the mitzvah, but not because this was something that they wanted and they were doing on their own. Which is also an interesting perspective. So there is a long essay about this in the Sefer Asufos Marachos of the Rashiv of Karen Biavna, of Goldbach, where he explains that this whole idea of specifically the Nevuah of leaving Berachos Gadol and the idea that that was absolutely inextricably connected to the Shiva, and that just as there was a Shiva, there also had to be a exodus Berachos Gadol, and that both parts of what was told to Avram had to be fulfilled. So he goes on at length there about the whole idea that Geirus, that when the Jews bring in converts, and when the Jews themselves were exiled among the nations of the world, so the purpose of that was the transforming of the Chol into Kodesh, the idea of being able to find that which should be sanctified and brought into Avodah Hashem, and that was the purpose of the Shibud and of the Golus as well, that that experience should allow the Jewish people to discover what it is that should be uplifted and incorporated within the Jewish identity, and that that's what we find in other aspects of comments in the Gemara about exile and also about the absorption of Gerim. It's also what we find in the Parsha about HaChodesh HaZalacham and the notion of sanctifying time and sanctifying occasions and the whole notion of Yontif and the idea that saying this calendaric moment is something that we are going to uplift and to sanctify, and Shemor HaChodesh Aviv, this year is a leap year because we are obligated to preserve the association between the calendar and its spiritual and halachic character, and to take the cycles of time and the aspects of reality and to uplift it. And so therefore, that's what the whole experience of Mitzrayim was meant to accomplish. So the rechush that we end up taking with us as we leave that's also a crucial part of the experience, and that is a part of what was being conveyed to Avraham Avinu, that yes, they're going to be exiled and they're going to be enslaved. All of that is so that they can come out with something, whether it's physical riches or it's spiritual growth that symbolizes. That's all a part of that package, and as they make their way to become a new nation and to settle the land of Eretz Yisrael, that is crucial that they are coming out of that experience enriched. And not just enriched in the material sense, but enriched in the spiritual sense, that that's what it represents, and that's what that whole Havtacha to Avraham Avinu is meant to reflect, and that's what Rashi is getting at, and that's what the whole Parsha, in essence, is trying to tell us about this experience of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So one could also ask, okay, so fine, but why did it have to be done b'mirma? You know, why did it have to be done from the Mitzrayim themselves, and before she asked that, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to be enriched, so he has all the access he needs, doesn't have to have it specifically coming from the hands of the Mitzrayim. So that, some of those Sfarim point out, that it's specifically meant to be, in a sense, a Mida Keneged Mida, a reversal, that the same Mitzrayim who enslaved them should be the Mitzrayim who enriched them. But also, as far as the method, so the question could be raised, now, why does it have to be with this aspect of mirma, this aspect of sneakiness, that they borrow the kelim and then they just disappear? So that seems to be somewhat dishonest, somewhat indirect, not so forthright. And the Gemara says that if somebody else has your property, even if you're entitled to it, so sometimes you need to just go in and take it, but you shouldn't sneak in through the back door, you shouldn't look like you're a ganav, you should do things in a forthright way. So why should it happen in this kind of seemingly deceptive kind of way? So that seems to be something that needs some explanation. So the Ran, his drashos, and also the Arachayim, they suggest that this was also a part of God's plan, that he wanted the Mitzrayim to be punished properly for what they did to the Jews by being drowned in the sea. And therefore, he needed to lure them into the sea by having them chase after the Jews who had their stuff and they were supposed to come back, and here they weren't coming back. So this was all a part of that plan to bring to that point. But also the idea that it should happen back in that fashion, okay, let us just borrow the kelim, and then wait a minute, what happened, where'd they go? So that's Mida Keneged Mida for how the Jews got brought into the Shibud. First, Horas Perach, Perach, that it was first a soft invitation to come work under better circumstances, and then it turned out to be enslavement. So, in order for there to be a real Mida Keneged Mida, as Rachaim explains, and similar to what the Ran is saying, that it needed to be this kind of a turnabout, this kind of a Mida Keneged Mida, so that the Mitzrim should really be properly punished, properly be paid back for what they imposed upon the Jews, and that all these various parts should come together in addition to the overall fulfillment of what was promised to Avraham Avinu and what that represents. And we'll just close by noting here the last pasuk. So it says, "Vayiten Hashem et chen ha'am be'enei Mitzrayim, gam ha'ish Moshe gadol ma'od be'eretz Mitzrayim be'enei avdei Farao be'enei ha'am." This is a great parallelism to what we saw last week, or 2 weeks ago, yes, with Parsha Shmos, where Shlishi Moshe was described as great, and here he's being appreciated as great. And here the Aznayim Latorah has a comment that it's being highlighted here because you see how supernatural this is. This is Yeshua Hashem. This is God's Chayin. Here the usage of the word Chayin, he doesn't emphasize specifically, but the usage of the word Chayin usually means somebody has favor in a way that is not so easily explicable. It doesn't necessarily follow what you would expect. So here you have these people, Moshe, Aaron. Here Moshe is being screamed at and threatened by the king and is being thrown out of the office. And you would think that that's the kind of thing that would lead people to disdain him, that would lead people to disrespect him. And yet the fact that Avdei Paro think that he's great, and the Am think he's great. So you see that that is the chayin that comes from the Yeshua Hashem, that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's favor, and it's radiating out of him, That's a very powerful message, and that, of course, is going to augur what is going to come from Moshe's leadership in the Pesukim that unfold. Max, is there a question? It could be that it's all related. It could be that's all a part of this overall plan in order to have Paro be treated the same way that the Egyptians treated the Jews. It was necessary for them to have that same kind of experience. Okay, so we will stop there. I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos and I guess a wonderful break. Since next week I won't be able to have Parshas here. But possibly the week after, I'll be in touch. We'll see where we're holding. But otherwise, I wish you a wonderful break and a wonderful time in between. And you should stay safe and stay healthy. And look forward to being in touch soon. And you should have a wonderful Shabbos. Kol Tov.